Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to another edition of Joel and Kit Save the Movies.
Yay!
Where's our theme song, Joel?
It's coming. Okay. It's coming. Much like the news. We're going to start things off with a little box office news. It was a very, very tight race last week. Universal claimed victory for Jurassic World, claiming that they had won their fourth week in a row on their $100 billionth of ticket sales. But then the numbers were counted, and come Monday morning, we had discovered that, in fact, Inside Out was number one.
Just by a few thousand.
By a few thousand dollars.
Like 29.8 to 29.2.
It was really close. And what is fascinating about that, and the people at Pixar, I think, cared a lot about this. They're still making hundreds of millions of dollars on this movie.
Yeah.
But Inside Out would have been the first Pixar movie in their history to not be number one.
Ever.
Ever. Hmm. So it would have had an asterisk against it.
And they can't have that.
They can't have that.
No.
But I guess the bigger news is how Terminator Genesis and Magic Mike did.
Yeah.
Which were both the new movies last week because of the fourth week. Did not have a show. But what do you think about how people responded or didn't respond?
Well, I'm not surprised about Magic Mike overall. I think, you know, I didn't really expect that to boom. You know, I thought as a sequel, it was, we both liked it very much. And it, you know, I had a lot of fun with it. But I just don't think the original was that, you know, I mean, it was kind of a quiet success. Mm-hmm. But I really was not surprised that it didn't. It got, I think it came in fourth or third?
Third.
No, fourth, because Terminator came in third.
Did the original, was that a summer movie or was...
The original, I
don't think it was.
That.
No, it wasn't. Not the first one, but the second one was. Judgment Day was.
Right. No, I'm talking about, he's talking about Magic Mike. Was a summer movie? I don't think it was a summer movie. No. I think it was like a fall or a late fall movie. Anyway, Terminator, though, I am a little surprised. I have to admit, I thought maybe, it would take the box office for the July 4th. But, I guess there was sort of a mixed bag as far as what the critics thought, mostly on the bad side. You and I both sort of enjoyed it for its own merits. I think one of the main things that people had a problem with was that it sort of messed with the mythology. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to see it all changed around, and it's kind of a timeline sort of switcheroo where, you know, an alternate universe kind of thing comes out. So that Sarah Connor is not, you know, in 1984, she's not the shy little wimpy waitress who has to be saved by a Kyle Reese. This time she's already been badass for a really long time. Mm-hmm. I personally did not mind that the timeline was messed up. That was tampered with. I liked it.
I think when you're dealing with time travel movies, you have free rein to do what you want. I mean, people saluted J.J. Abrams for what he did with the first Star Trek reboot.
Which I loved.
Which a lot of people loved, including myself, and how after that movie he could have gone anywhere. He could have done anything he wanted. Why he went to the world of Khan, we'll never know. But, you know, people saluted him for that. I don't know what it is about the Terminator timeline that people feel it's so sacred. I'm also wondering if the trailers did a disservice by showing us too much.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it showed John Connor as the villain.
Yeah.
And he's the hero. I mean, he's always been the hero.
Right.
So, I don't know. I just, it's interesting. There are two sequels greenlit for this one. But with the box office, it didn't do badly, you know, almost $30 million. But like, is that going to give us a sequel? I don't know. We'll see.
It was kind of a lackluster 4th of July weekend.
Very much, but people have been saying it has been lately. Mm-hmm. I mean, it used to be the money weekend, whether it was Men in Black or Independence Day. Well, basically anything starring Will Smith
and Terminator 2, right?
But ever since then, Hollywood's been a little shy to toss an Ant-Man or Guardians of the Galaxy came out in like August.
That's right.
It could have come out on July 4th. But
you know, last 4th of July, it was Tammy.
That's right. That's right. So, I mean, I don't know if I mean, maybe the economy is coming back, but I'm wondering if more people, AAA are saying more people are hitting the road and not flying for vacation. And maybe Hollywood is figuring people are actually going places on the 4th of July. They're not sitting in a movie house. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the weekend it used to be.
Maybe so. I mean, summer's really changed overall as far as movies. Because now, you know, it used to be they didn't really start until Memorial Day, the big ones. And now it's like almost middle of April sometimes that they'll start. Because Captain America last year came out in the middle of April. This year it was definitely, well, there was Furious 7, which came out in April, but then of course it's the beginning of May now when the Avengers Age of Ultron came out. So it's almost if it's sort of anticlimactic, I think, the July 4th weekend now because of just how early they start.
Time almost over.
Yeah.
It's almost over, but it's not over. We have three.
Three wonderful movies.
Wonderful movies for audiences to enjoy. And I think we have to start with the little yellow fellows known as Minions.
Little yellow pills.
The little yellow pills.
Actually, before you guys jump into that, I realized I jumped in here and being the good producer that I am, the audience doesn't know who I am. They've heard my voice, so...
This is our wonderful producer, Steve Troutman, who also happens to be my husband.
Happens to be, yes.
But you can call him Producer Steve.
Yeah, Producer Steve.
I am Producer Steve.
And he will interject here and there because he also is a movie lover. And
the co-host on a couple other podcasts, the Hollywood Insight podcast and the Third and Fairfax, the official podcast of the Writers Guild of America West.
Nice plug, hon.
Thank you. I do what I can.
All right, nicely done.
Back to
Joel and Kit saving the movies. Thank you very much.
Back to the Minions.
And you mentioned the little yellow pills. Would you believe, and I don't know if you guys have seen this, Tic Tac came out with Minion Tic Tac this week.
I had
brilliant.
Brilliant.
No idea.
I need to get some on the way home.
Well, there's also a little bit of controversy because McDonald's has got talking little toys. And apparently, it sounds like one of them says, what the...
F.
But the WTF, as we like to say it in the...
But they're standing by their Minions saying that is not what they are saying. And you all have a dirty mind, America.
And leave our Minions alone.
Leave the Minions alone, because it is a very family-friendly franchise.
Very.
And that's exactly it. I mean, I think we saw it together, and I think I enjoy the Despicable Me movies very much. I absolutely love the Minions. But this one underwhelmed me a little bit, but I think kids are just going to love it.
Yeah, they're going to eat it up. I mean, the kids in the audience, when we were seeing it, they were laughing. And, you know, I think overall, they're a wonderful side character, and they added so much color to the Despicable Me movies. But for a movie all for themselves, maybe not quite as... You know, I guess we're very discerning now as far as adults watching animated movies, because we're so used to being catered to as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the Pixar movies and even the Despicable Me, the first one certainly had a lot of adult humor in it. So I think we're a little spoiled that way. And so when there's a movie that comes out that's really just very silly and fun, you know, we might not love it as much as critics, but... I think the kids. Yeah.
Oh, the kids are going to.
They're going to want Minion stuff.
Yeah.
They already sell a crap load of Minion stuff at Universal and whatnot. But yeah, this is going to take it up a notch.
All you have to do is drive over here, here being Burbank, and you see the billboards for Universal Studios. And the ride is called Despicable Me. And the me in that is Gru, Steve Carell's character. But who's on the billboard? The Minions.
Minions. Always the Minions.
It's always the Minions. So I think this is going to kill this weekend at the box office.
You think it's going to win?
No, absolutely.
You do?
I do.
Yeah.
I think...
it'll beat Inside Out?
I think it'll beat Inside Out.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I just think that they've done a really shrewd job of advertising this, too. And I think the kids are just clamoring for it. And I think I've said this before, but like even my two-year-old has no idea what they are. But when that commercial comes on the television, she loses it. I mean, she just loses it and cackles and laughs. And I mean, I was writing my review and I was on IMDb yesterday, and the Minions are all over that thing, and the speakers are on, and they're making their little noises. And she came running over, and she's like, and I'm just like, what is it about these characters?
Bottom.
Bottom.
Banana.
Banana.
And they just love them. So
yeah.
I mean, the other thing I've anyone who listens tell me the soundtrack is just amazing. It's like a British invasion.
Well, it takes place in like the mid 60s and they end up in London.
That's right.
They're always on the quest for a henchman. So the first 10 minutes of the movie is probably the most hilarious part where you see them evolve. First they're like, oh, the T-Rex, and then there's I can't remember what else there was, but then Napoleon.
And Caveman. Dracula.
And they always screw things up.
They are always inadvertently responsible for the demise of their leader.
So maybe they're not so bad after all. But they go to London and they meet Scarlett Overkill, who's voiced by Sandra Bullock, and her husband, who's kind of the nebbish scientist guy, played by John Hamm. And the music was fantastic.
Kinks and...
Beatles
and just, you know, anybody that came from England during that time. I noticed one Doors song. That was like the one non-UK band, which I thought was interesting.
Of the times.
It was certainly of the times. It kind of feels a bit original. And then by the second act, it's feeling like a lot of cartoon movies we've seen before.
Yeah.
But again, the kids are going to love it. It's not necessarily a Pixar movie that's geared at adults and kids. This is firmly child candy for the ears and eyes.
We also have to. I also want to point out Jennifer Saunders from Absolutely Fabulous. She plays the Queen Elizabeth, a younger Queen Elizabeth with the bad teeth, the buck teeth. Mm-hmm. She's probably the highlight. I think she was very funny.
Steve Coogan.
Oh, right. Who did he play?
I looked it up. He played the guard, the last guard before they get the crown.
Oh.
Who's blind.
That guy.
Who gets the best of the minions, even though he can't see a thing. Yeah.
So there are definitely some moments to it, but it's strictly for the kids. But then we have a sort of sci-fi, trippy, definitely more on our end type of movie. Selfless, directed by Tarsem Singh, who is responsible for some eye candy type films like The Cell and Immortals. And it stars Ryan Reynolds and Ben Kingsley. Go ahead, you tell them what it's about.
Well, basically, Kingsley is a real estate billionaire and he has days or a week maybe to live from cancer and learns about this procedure where they can put his memories and his brain, not maybe even literally his brain, but his memory and intelligence into the body of somebody much younger and more virile, so to speak. And that person, of course, is Ryan Reynolds. So for the first act, we get Kingsley, and maybe midway towards the end of the first act, we get Reynolds for the rest of the movie. And Reynolds is Kingsley.
He does a nice job.
He does a very nice job, his best performance in years. But he's haunted by these flashes where he starts to feel that maybe this wasn't a body built in a lab, that maybe this was a body that Which is what he was told.
Right.
But he starts to learn that maybe this is actually somebody who had a life before. And so they kind of figuratively head down the rabbit hole.
Yep.
And it turns kind of into a straight action movie with a lot of action and things like that. But I personally liked the questions it raised. I liked the pacing. I liked that Tarsem took a left turn from his visual stuff to make a movie like this. Mm-hmm. And I think it also raised a lot of questions that I think need to be answered. What did you think?
Yeah, I didn't love it as much. I think from Ex Machina, which I just absolutely adored, and I think you haven't had a chance to see that one
yet.
You got to see that. It was, you know, very sci-fi, very sort of, you know, antiseptic, and but it explored, you know, a whole, you know, range of different things that could be happening in the future, which I really enjoyed. And this kind of, you know, started out that way, not necessarily so antiseptic, but I liked the idea of, you know, living forever. You know, the questions posed is like, what if Albert Einstein had this, you know, capability, or Steve Jobs? You know, Steve Jobs would have done it in half a second.
Millisecond.
But
And he would have gotten Ashton Kutcher's body.
Yes. Yes. Not Michael Fassbender. No,
he would have gone with the
He would have gone with Ashton, yeah. But the fact that it does sort of devolve into an action, you know, on the run type film sort of lost it for me. I kind of wanted to keep in the science more than I wanted to see the action.
Well, you know, what's interesting is, we both talked to Tarsem, and I also talked to the cast. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ryan and Ben didn't do press for the movie, but what's interesting is I asked Natalie Martinez, don't want to say too much about her role.
No.
But I asked her what she thought the film was mostly about, and she thinks it's how far you would go to protect your family.
Hmm.
So maybe it also veers away from being a sci-fi movie to an action movie about a guy trying to save his family.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's what they were going for, but it's not what we necessarily wanted it to do.
Right. Then for me, then it's too much.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, when you say it like that, because Ben Kingsley's character also has some issues with
his
family.
Yes, he does.
So maybe, yeah, I think maybe that... I can see it a little bit more like that.
Because his relationship with his daughter is so terrible.
Right.
He has nothing. He has everything in the world but time.
Right.
And if he had more time, he could work on that relationship.
Well, that's what he wants, right.
So, I mean, I could see where that was what they were sold. But, I think it's a good departure for Tarsem.
He does a nice job with this.
He does a great job with it, I think. Ryan Reynolds has made some questionable choices in the last couple of years about between this and the upcoming Deadpool movie.
Yeah.
I think the man is definitely on an upswing.
Yeah. I love him still. Yeah. He can make a bad movie. I still like him in it. This one, he doesn't get to be snarky or anything. Mm-hmm. So he's playing it pretty straight, but he does, you know, of course he does the action stuff very well.
Right.
And he was all believable. And as a film, a cohesive film, it was certainly enjoyable to watch. I guess I wanted to stick more to the science.
Yeah. Well, I felt that they moved quickly.
Yeah.
Into an
action.
Right.
Yeah.
We
definitely both agree that we'd wanted a little bit more Ben Kingsley.
Yeah. Well, when can you never have too much Ben Kingsley? Or as he insists, and rightfully so, to be called Sir Ben.
Yes.
He doesn't mind if you drop the Kingsley, but just make sure
you've interviewed him before.
Yeah, a couple of times.
Yeah, I interviewed him for this movie, House of Sand and Fog. Did you see that movie?
Yeah.
That devastated me.
Yeah, that's a heartbreaker.
I mean, I was like, I was just dissolved. And I remember I saw it in a morning screening in Florida. And so I walked outside and it's like bright sun in my eyes and I've been sobbing and I'm like, oh, I can't deal. But he was truly one of the most amazing people to talk to.
Oh, yeah.
We ended up talking about Shakespeare. And I mean, it was incredible. He can do anything too. And he will do anything.
Oh, yeah. One of my best conversations with him was for the Box Trolls.
Oh, yeah.
And as someone who's done voice acting before, talking to him about doing a voice performance just broke all the barriers. I mean, he insisted on laying down on a couch with a mic like this. I mean, you just don't do that, but you don't tell Ben Kingsley no. So he did it that way, and that performance is incredible.
Wow.
So, go see it for Ben and for resurgent Ryan.
Ryan, yeah.
And
a little sci-fi, a little action.
Yeah, and I think it's a good summer entry.
It's not bad.
You know,
it's not bad.
So there's that. And then our last entry is a movie that I think I saw and you didn't.
I did not.
And you, let's just say, be glad you didn't.
Yeah. Although I think you liked it a little bit up
I
to
liked
a certain
it a little
point.
Bit.
Yeah.
It's just one of these movies. It's The Gallows. It's a found footage movie.
Horror
found footage movie about a group of kids.
Really? You think with the title The Gallows, it wouldn't be a horror movie?
I think it'd be a comedy. The Singing Hangman.
Singing Hangman.
Was its alternative title.
Really? I thought as a comedy, it could be like a family adventure comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's The Gallows.
Yeah.
You know, it's dark.
Well, what happens at the end of the day when the hangman is done? What's that guy's family life like? And he just needs a vacation.
I swear we should be making movies. I'm telling you.
That's actually kind of funny.
That's a good one.
He goes home, takes off his hat, and like, see you later, boys. until tomorrow. And
but unfortunately, that is not what this
is. That is not what this is. This is a story of a group of high school kids who are launching a play called The Gallows. 20 years prior, they launched the high school launched the show The Gallows, and mysteriously, the lead actor died on The Gallows in front of the live audience. And they are doing a tribute to the 20th anniversary by relaunching this show, and they're going to get it right.
Because it went so well last time.
Yes. Okay, our first problem with this movie.
Some poor judgment by the drama department.
The school board would never go for that in a million years.
Nope.
The principal would never go for that in a million years.
Nope.
Nobody would go for that in a million years, but thus we wouldn't have a movie. So anyway, they head forward. The lead actor is feeling that he's terrible, which he is. So his buddy convinces him that the best way to cancel the show is to sneak into the school at night and destroy the set, and then the show would have to be canceled. Which is what you do when you're a bad actor.
Don't wait for the reviews.
Don't wait for the reviews. Just destroy the set and call it a day. I don't know what happened.
But we can't go on.
We can't go on? This is terrible. This sucks, man. So they trash the set, and guess what? The lead actress just happens to show up.
She wasn't at the dark school. At first,
And going, what are you doing? Oh, my God, you're ruining my chance at being great. And all the doors shut, and they're all locked in there, being pursued by this ghost, I think, or something.
Supposedly the ghost of the guy who died,
The ghost who died. There's a twist that I won't tell you in case you like torture and being hung by your neck in a movie theater and want to see this movie. But the twist is so inane. It's right up there with, the school board, let them do this play again. The twist, I mean, the movie kind of had me there for a while, if I could let a few things go. But when the twist happened, I felt so insulted. It just didn't make sense. It didn't add up. It doesn't make sense in terms of math, in terms of sociology.
Oh, you're drawing math into a horror movie.
Absolutely.
Oh, you have to. You have to. It has to do with dates and additions.
Oh, okay.
There's just no way.
Yeah, it's
there's just no way. And then the twist has a twist at the end of the twist. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, nobody would notice that. Yeah, and by the way, we're set up for a sequel. No, I don't think so.
As you're describing it, and as a writer and as a former drama teacher, I was thinking that, well, obviously the principal has something to do with it, and possibly the current drama teacher. That would make the most sense.
Well, what's fascinating is the principal we never see, but the drama teacher is actually played by the guy who wrote and directed it.
One of the guys, because I think there's two.
Yeah, there's a pair. And I don't know. I got to salute them because there are two guys who kind of came out of nowhere. They wanted to make a Hollywood movie. They figured, I got a chance to talk to them. They figured their best way to get into Hollywood out of left field, one's from Nebraska, one's from Fresno, is to make a found footage horror movie. Mm-hmm. And it worked. They got their Hollywood movie. We'll see if people turn out for it. I know people like to be scared, and there are really no horror movies out in the theaters right now.
No.
Now, one thing that I have heard in vis-a-vis the, you know, you want to break into Hollywood, make a horror movie, especially a low-budget, found footage, mm-hmm. contained type of thing, that is subtly changing. I've mm-hmm. Been talking to producers over the last 6 months on one of the other podcasts, and the new thing that people seem to be looking for are low-budget sci-fi. Or as they're calling it, lo-fi.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can get a contained, low-budget sci-fi movie, that's what that seems to do really well overseas. Mm-hmm. Like horror kind of does still, but there's the feeling is there's a saturation point we've reached.
Yeah, we've hit it.
What's the one that the one where they go back in time and they find the time machine?
Hot Tub Time Machine?
No, it's a found footage one.
Oh, Project Almanac.
Project Almanac, yeah. Which I kind of enjoyed.
I kind of enjoyed, but found footage movies kind of hit the wall, and I agree with you, Steve. I think that a movie that I actually really loved that was low-budget sci-fi that I think struck a chord around the world, didn't do that great here, but The Signal?
Yes.
The Signal, and just, you know, Lawrence Fishburne's in it, and if you haven't seen it, seek that movie out.
Yeah.
If anything, it introduced the world to that filmmaker. And I think now he's moving on to bigger and better things. But it's also, it was a novelty, I think, found footage. And I think what's very interesting about this movie and some other found footage movies in the last 5-6 years is there's so many things that are going on. I cannot believe that these people are still filming.
Well, it's so easy. It's so easy and it's so cheap to film now with the technology.
You're being hanged by a noose that came up behind you, but you still have the presence of mind to put your camera
on yourself. Oh, you're talking about story logic.
Within the movie. Like, at what point do you drop the camera and try to save your own life?
Well, at that point, you're hoping that the audience doesn't realize that they're still watching a found footage movie.
Right, exactly. So anyway, that's The Gallows in a nutshell.
Yeah. I mean, it was 15 years ago about 15 years ago that we had Blair Witch.
Right.
And that was that was more about marketing than it was.
Yeah, they marketed that phenomenally well.
That was
first people that saw that movie actually thought it was real.
Yeah.
Right, because that was the pitch. I think they were using, at the time, MySpace, mm-hmm. or the very early version of mm-hmm. Facebook. I don't know if Facebook has been around 15 years. Mm-hmm. But I remember seeing these things online, and a guy I was working with is very much on the forefront of all this type of stuff. And he said, you've got to see this. Look at this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watch a little snippet online. And they were using the very early iterations of social media.
But they totally made it seem like it was a real documentary, and it was, you know, just, it was well done.
It was well done.
I mean, the movie itself was okay.
Right.
It's almost a little anticlimactic, but certainly the buildup for it.
Yeah.
Probably the one that I think scares me the most, sort of the found footage, was the first Paranormal Activity.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That one really freaked me out.
No, I saw that late at night on home video, and I purposely shut off every light in the house, and that scared the crap out of me. Yeah. And I'm not easily scared, and I loved it for it. Yeah. Plus, it was just such a great success story.
Yeah.
So that's where we are with found footages. And
yes, so I think Minions will probably
top
the box office. And, you know, as far as the adults out there, Selfless might be a fun one to go see as well.
Right.
We also have Comic-Con this weekend, which they've already had a few highlights so far. It runs through Sunday.
Because we're recording this on Friday.
Yes, we are recording this on Friday. So we'll give you some detail, more full details next week. But what is so far? What's been the hubbub? Mockingjay.
Mockingjay. Nothing much to say because it's like when Deathly Hallows came out when they're doing press for the second part. It's like, what didn't they say the first time around? Mm-hmm. So it's really not much news from that, other than.
But you know what? They didn't go to Comic-Con last year with part one.
That's
so
right.
They haven't talked about Mockingjay at all, really.
Not at Comic-Con.
Not at Comic-Con.
They did a press tour.
Right.
But, you know, it looks fantastic, frankly. I mean, just what little they've shown. It's all been propaganda. There hasn't even been a lot of footage shown.
Right.
But I think they're hitting the right notes on that. But I guess the biggest news will probably come out tonight because there's a Star Wars panel.
Ah.
And there was a leaked photo that came out from a run-through. Now, they announced earlier this week already that we're getting a Han Solo Origins movie.
Right.
Directed by the guys that did the Lego Movie and 21 Jump Street,
mm-hmm.
who are absolutely fantastic. But if you look at that leaked photo, it's not just a Han Solo Origins movie. It's called Solo Fett.
Oh.
So it would be the origins of the Boba Fett chasing Han Solo story, which I think has a lot of potential. The other standalone movie that was on the left before the final Star Wars Episode 9 was just simply called Kenobi. Ben Kenobi movie. Now, people say that this photo isn't real, but the whole reason I saw it is I follow Star Wars on Facebook and they posted it. So the official Star Wars Facebook page reposted this leaked photo. So we'll see how much of that is true. They may have just put put it up there like, haha, this is funny.
Well, I'm sure Boba Fett's going to be a big part of his origin story. He has to, but I still think it'll probably mostly, you know, focus on Han and probably from his like early beginnings too. Because isn't Jabba Hutt the one who hires Boba Fett to go after? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll have to meet Jabba.
Right.
And the thing about the Kenobi one, though, is we sort of already saw him as a young man in you know, the first three, The Phantom Menace. And,
right.
And I'm, so what more?
Well, and it's weird because
just him Ewan becoming McGregor a Jedi or?
Has kind of hinted that he sees playing him again in his future.
Oh.
Well, there is all of that time between...
There is.
Between...
I want to see Yoda's backstory. Yeah. No, I don't. I want to see where his family looks like. Are they all green and funny look like, looking?
Yeah, green minions with ears.
Well, I think he used to be normal looking.
It's like Gollum.
No, yeah. It's just that's what happens when you age 300 years. You right. turn green and get very little.
Right. Well, you do. You know, you're
and
your
you ears, talk funny.
Old guys, their ears get big and they get shorter.
It's
so.
holding that lightsaber for all those years has turned
it's
him
so
into
heavy.
A green-eared.
If I have to lift this thing one more time, I must lift this.
Because the ring turned Schmeagol into Gollum.
Well, the Force. You know, 300 years of fighting the dark side. That's just gonna wear on you. And it's going to make you green.
I think honestly, this needs to be put out there. I think we need to contact.
There you go. We need a little sizzle reel, and the music under it is "It's Hard to Be Green."
I think it's hard to be green, and I think he's the lone Jewish Jedi. Right. Can you see Yoda as like, "Oy vey,
oy vey.
Where can I get a bagel and a schmear, huh?"
Like a bulk.
How do you get so
sign?
Big on this food that you eat? Yeah.
Would it be too much to ask?
I need to feed you. Here, come in. We'll eat some.
Have some stew.
It's matzo stew.
We'll have some. What is the noodle thing he called?
Kugel.
Yeah.
Awesome kugel.
Kugel you will have. So anyway.
This is from the movie mensch over here.
That's right. The movie mensch talking.
I will nosh.
He will. So anyway, we'll have more info on that tonight.
Yeah.
Also, tomorrow is the big Warner Brothers presentation, but they've already made one announcement, and that's that Ben Affleck will write and direct.
Is he going to show up?
A Batman solo movie.
Well, he's not going to be home with the wife.
No, he's suddenly free.
Apparently, well, I just read earlier today is that he is actually in Atlanta with the kids because she's doing something.
Ah.
So I'm not sure if he's going to
show up. Well, maybe that's why they made the announcement, is he's not going to be at Comic-Con, but he will... be writing and directing and starring in a Batman solo movie.
Now that intrigues
Batman
me.
And Han Solo.
Yes.
Now that's a movie we need to
see. When they announced that the Han Solo was getting a solo movie, it got really tricky with headlines.
Yes.
Han Solo solo movie announced. I was like, yeah, that's too much solo.
That's too much solo.
Standalone.
I'm intrigued with Ben directing something. Mm-hmm. I do think he's a good director.
I do too.
So... that should be an interesting...
And he co-wrote Argo,
too.
And he also co-wrote he got a...
his Academy Award.
There's an Academy Award is for writing.
That's right. So it could be good.
Well, we'll definitely, you know, sort of go through everything that happened at Comic-Con next week. As we said, the movie stuff is not as big anymore at Comic-Con. It's definitely more TV, but there's certainly enough movie stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
It would be very funny, though, if he wrote it as Batman going through a very bitter divorce.
Well, he's supposed to be older and angry, so...
Well, that would do it.
He's Bruce Wayne, but, like, he's in a shabby bachelor apartment in his 50s. And he's like, I used to run the world, man.
Stubble and ramen.
She just gutted me. Why did I not sign a prenup?
Golly, I didn't even get the bat cave.
She took the bat signal. Why does she need the bat signal for?
She's a bat bitch.
Right. And then she sets it off and I go running and she's like, ha ha, yeah, very funny. Do you know how hard it is to put on the suit out when I'm 50 years old?
Ha ha ha.
Yeah, but she took the belt. I don't even have the utility belt.
Okay, boys.
Okay,
geeking out over bat.
We're digressing. We could.
Sorry.
But anyway, so that is another edition of Joel and Kit and Steve Save the Movies.
Producer Steve had interjected himself a lot in this one.
I just can't shut up.
That's fine.
Well, that's true.
All successful shows have a producer Steve or producer Dave or producer Dave. So this, it was a natural progression.
Yes.
Next week we have
Ant-Man.
And Trainwreck. And a little movie that has me very fascinated, Mr. Holmes.
Mr. Holmes, yes.
Ian McKellen as an old man Sherlock Holmes.
93 years old he is.
Color me intrigued.
That's good.
And so.
But Ant-Man will be the big one next week.
That'll be huge.
Well, we'll get to talk all about that. And Trainwreck, we haven't seen yet, but we're very excited. Amy Schumer.
Tuesday.
And Judd Apatow. So looking forward to that one as well.
And LeBron James.
So you can follow me at Twitter at The Movie Kit or on my website, themoviekit.com. And Joel?
I am now at themoviemensch.com. You can follow me there.
Yes. And it's, I love that name still.
Oh, well, thank you.
We need to say it all the time.
Movie Mensch. Oy vey, it's fantastic.
Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you all next week.
What? I don't get to sign out?
You already plugged your stuff already, honey.
I know, but I didn't plug my Twitter account.
Go ahead.
At Dumb Story Ideas.
A few were heard today.
Yes. And more to come, I'm sure.
Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful week at the movies.